responsibility by standing by the HIV theory for so long. This is why doubting the HIV hypothesis is now tantamount to doubting science itself, and this is why dissidents face excommunication. As Carey Mullis says in his book, Dancing Naked in the Mind Field, what people call science today is probably very similar to what was called science in 1634. Galileo was told to recant his beliefs or be excommunicated. People who refuse to accept the commandments of the AIDS establishment are basically told the same thing. The quasi-religious nature of the debate is evident in the loathing and pious moralizing expressed toward Duisburg by an unnamed Berkeley scientist interviewed by Celia Farber for her 2006 book, Serious Adverse Events, An Uncensored History of AIDS. He did it to himself, you know. You see, he wouldn't give up an idea. He went at it with a hammer. He may well be 3,000% right, but he upset an awful lot of people. Nobody believed in him because what he was doing was overturning generally held views. They felt betrayed. You don't just stand up and say everybody is wrong. In her book, Science Sold Out, Does HIV Really Cause AIDS? Rebecca Colshaw writes, the persistence of this intellectually bankrupt theory in the public mind is attributable entirely to the campaign of fear, discrimination, and terror that has been waged aggressively by a powerful group of people whose sole motivation was and is behavior control. Yes, the money and the vast interests of the pharmaceutical industry and government-funded scientists are important, but the seeds of the HIV/AIDS hypothesis are sowed with fear. If the fear were to end, the myth would end. Please go to the Children's Health Defense website for the acknowledgments, end notes by chapter, updates to data, and new information that becomes available on any of the subject matter covered in this audiobook. Chapter 7, Dr. Fauci, Mr. Hyde, NIAID's Barbaric and Illegal Experiments on Children. The Nazi medical experiments are an example of this sadism, for in the use of concentration camp inmates and prisoners of war as human guinea pigs, very little, if any, benefit to science was achieved. It is a tale of horrors of which the German medical profession cannot be proud. Although the experiments were conducted by fewer than 200 murderous quacks, albeit some of them held eminent posts in the medical world, their criminal work was known to thousands of leading physicians of the Reich, not a single one of whom, so far as the record shows, ever uttered the slightest public protest. William L. Shirer, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. Science advances one funeral at a time. Max Planck. During the nearly four decades since Dr. Anthony Fauci took the agency's reins, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, NIAID, has often treated America's most vulnerable children as collateral damage in its director's single-minded pursuit of profitable pharmacological solutions for steadily declining public health. AZT's sketchy and corrupt path to regulatory approval in 1988 blazed a trail for a multi-billion-dollar boom in new HIV drugs, and Dr. Fauci gave broad leeway to his pharmaceutical partners and their PIs to conduct unethical human experimentation that exposed both children and adults to toxic compounds. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, and its predecessor agency, the Public Health Service, already had a long history of morally repugnant experiments on vulnerable subjects, including imprisoned convicts, institutionalized adults with intellectual disabilities, and orphaned children in hellholes like Staten Island's Willowbrook and the Fernald School in Waltham, Massachusetts. In 1973, Dr. Stanley Plotkin penned a letter to the New England Journal of Medicine in which he justified his experiments on vulnerable, intellectually disabled children, saying they are humans in form but not in social potential. Those sorts of prejudices did nothing to damage his lofty reputation among his colleagues. Vaccinologists consider the annual Stanley Plotkin Award the Nobel Prize of Vaccinology. In 2019, the British Medical Journal called Plotkin the godfather of vaccines. These homegrown American medical Mengeles most often targeted impoverished American Indians and blacks in Africa, the Caribbean, and in the United States as their laboratory rats. I am proud that my uncle, Senator Edward Kennedy, played a key role in ending the government's 40-year Tuskegee syphilis experiment begun in 1932, another notorious medical research assault on a vulnerable population, when he learned about it in 1972 from a CDC whistleblower. Government regulators and their pharmaceutical industry partners often combined racial discrimination with child abuse in HHS's drug and vaccine development campaigns. During the government industry polio vaccine experiments of the 1950s through 1960s, U.S. vaccinologists like Hilary Koprowski and Stanley Plotkin worked with Belgian colonial authorities in the Congo to recruit millions of black African child volunteers for dozens of mass population trials with experimental vaccines that were perhaps considered to be too risky to test on white children. As late as 1989, the CDC conducted lethal experiments with a hazardous measles vaccine on black children in Cameroon, Haiti, and South Central Los Angeles, killing dozens of little girls before halting the program. CDC did not tell volunteers that they were participating in an experiment. In 2014, another CDC whistleblower, the agency's senior vaccine safety scientist, Dr. William Thompson, disclosed that top CDC officials had forced him and four other senior researchers to lie to the public and destroy data that showed disproportionate vaccine injuries, including a 340% elevated risk for autism in black male infants who received the measles, mumps, rubella, MMR vaccine on schedule. So it was only natural that Dr. Fauci and his pharma partners employed black and Hispanic foster children for cruel and barbaric treatments in their efforts to develop their second-generation antivirals and chimeric HIV vaccines that provided the initial stepping stones for his career. In 1989, Dr. Fauci declined President George H.W. Bush's offer to become NIH director, explaining, "I was training for the AIDS epidemic before it even happened. My being involved with it has been my passion and my life's work." Dr. Fauci's philanthropic demurrer might have been disingenuous. By then, his power as NIAID director dwarfed the authority wielded by his nominal boss at NIH. His successful early machinations during the AIDS drug boom had won NIAID a massive discretionary budget and global influence over scientific research and international health policy, including de facto control over its sister HHS agencies, FDA and CDC. The NIAID directorship also offered dizzying publicity opportunities and lucrative partnerships with pharmaceutical companies as NIAID became pharma's chief incubator and collaborator in new drug development and promotion. Biocontainment handling expert and trainer Sean Kaufman, who designed and built mock biosafety level BSL laboratories for NIAID in the mid-2000s, is a longtime admirer of Dr. Fauci and trained hundreds of BSL workers in safety protocols for NIAID. Kaufman told me, "Everyone knows that Dr. Fauci runs the whole show at HHS. All the other agency heads are figureheads, Tony Fauci pulls all the strings. Jonathan Fishbein, MD, who served as head of the Division of AIDS, DAIDS, Office of Policy and Clinical Research Operations from 2003 to 2005, told me that Fauci's expanding influence seemed to eclipse that of his boss, NIH Director Dr. Elias Zerhouni. When Zerhouni could have taken the high road and righted the misconduct that I exposed in the Division of AIDS, he chose to stay uninvolved. Fauci is a master at marketing himself and his institute, and leveraged AIDS to generate huge appropriations from Congress to the NIH. Who would ever have stood up to him? Certainly not Zerhouni or his successors. NIAID money is spread throughout the major medical institutions in the United States, and for that reason, he wields enormous influence in the medical community. Dr. Fauci's corrupt collaboration with pharmaceutical companies that yielded NIAID's scandalous approval of AZT in 1987 consolidated his symbiotic relationship with the pharma PIs and lowered NIAID's standards for product approvals. His relationships with his PIs and their pharma patrons yielded a cascade of beneficial personal opportunities, and Dr. Fauci quickly learned to overlook pharma's excesses. The 1980 Bayh-Dole Act allowed NIAID and Dr. Fauci personally to file patents on the hundreds of new drugs that his agency-funded PIs were incubating, and then to license those drugs to pharmaceutical companies and collect royalties on their sales. NIAID's drug development enterprise quickly eclipsed HHS's regulatory function. Millions of dollars began flowing in from drug royalties to NIH and to NIAID's high-level personnel, including Dr. Fauci, further blurring the boundaries between public health and pharma profits. According to an exposé by the Associated Press, in all, 916 current and former NIH researchers are receiving royalty payments for drugs and other inventions they developed while working for the government. That investigation concluded that scientists and administrators at the National Institutes of Health flagrantly disregard ethical and legal requirements of financial disclosure. Financial conflicts with pharmaceutical companies quickly became the defining feature of Dr. Fauci's governance style. As early as 1992, a Department of Health and Human Services Inspector General investigation concluded that NIAID failed to police conflicts of interest by his PIs in a vaccine clinical trial. All that new NIH and NIAID money made clinical trials a vast, booming industry. Holocaust survivor Vera Sharov spent her long career investigating abusive human experiments by NIAID and other agencies. Sharov told me, beginning around 1990, clinical trials became the profit center for the medical community. The insurance industry and HMOs were squeezing doctors so that it became hard to make big money practicing medicine. The most ambitious doctors left patient care and gravitated toward clinical trials. Everybody involved was making money except the subjects of the human experiments. At the center of everything was NIH and NIAID. While people were not paying attention, the agency quietly became the partner of the industry. Pharma's ethics quickly pervaded and corrupted NIAID's culture. The agency routinely overlooked and often sanctioned and engaged in routine manipulation of science to prove efficacy of dangerous and ineffective drugs. Callous disregard towards suffering and deaths among clinical trial volunteers became a feature of NIAID's modus operandi. According to the AP investigation, NIH scientists who violate ethical and legal requirements and use underhanded recruitment tactics pose a very real and present threat to public safety, hundreds, perhaps thousands of patients in NIH experiments made decisions to participate in experiments that often carry risks without full knowledge about the researchers' financial interests. In 2004, investigative journalist Liam Sheff chronicled Dr. Fauci's secretive experiments on hundreds of HIV-positive foster children at Incarnation Children's Center, ICC, in New York City, and numerous sister facilities in New York and six other states between 1988 and 2002. Those experiments were the core of Dr. Fauci's career-defining effort to develop a second generation of profitable AIDS drugs as an encore to AZT. Sheff described how Dr. Fauci's NIAID and his big pharma partners turned black and Hispanic foster kids into lab rats, subjecting them to torture and abuse in a grim parade of unsupervised drug and vaccine studies. This former convent houses a revolving stable of children who've been removed from their own homes by the Agency for Child Services, ACS. These children are black, Hispanic, and poor. Many of their mothers had a history of drug abuse and have died. Once taken into ICC, the children become subjects of drug trials sponsored by Dr. Anthony Fauci's NIAID, NICHD, the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, in conjunction with some of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies, GlaxoSmithKline, Pfizer, Genentech, Chiron Biocine, and others. NIAID's pharma partners remunerated Incarnation Children's Center, ICC, for supplying children for the tests. As usual, Dr. Fauci had the Safety Oversight Board rigged with his loyal PIs, foremost of whom was Dr. Stephen Nicholas, a generously funded NIAID AIDS drug researcher. Stephen Nicholas was not only director of the ICC until 2002, he also simultaneously sat on the Pediatric Medical Advisory Panel, which was supposed to oversee the tests, which signifies a serious conflict of interest, criticizes Vera Shirov, president of the Alliance for Human Research Protection, AHRP, a medical industry watchdog organization. Sheff continued, "The drugs being given to the children are toxic. They're known to cause genetic mutation, organ failure, bone marrow death, bodily deformations, brain damage, and fatal skin disorders. If the children refuse the drugs, they're held down and force-fed. If the children continue to resist, they're taken to Columbia Presbyterian Hospital, where a surgeon puts a plastic tube through their abdominal wall into their stomachs. From then on, the drugs are injected directly into their intestines." In 2003, two children, ages 6 and 12, had debilitating strokes due to drug toxicities. The 6-year-old went blind. They both died shortly after. Another 14-year-old died recently. An 8-year-old boy had two plastic surgeries to remove large, fatty, drug-induced lumps from his neck. This isn't science fiction. This is AIDS research. Even the foster children who survived Fauci's experiments reported dire side effects, ranging from skin outbreaks and hives, nausea and vomiting, to sharp drops in immune response and fevers, all common adverse reactions associated with the drugs he was targeting for development. During one of his trials involving the drug Dapsone, at least 10 children died. A May 2005 Associated Press investigation reported that those children died from a variety of causes, including 4 from blood poisoning. Researchers complained they were unable to determine a safe, useful dosage. Their guessing game cost those children their lives. An unexpected finding in our study, the researchers pitilessly observed, was that overall mortality while receiving the study drug was significantly higher in the daily Dapsone group. NIAID researchers shrugged off the deaths as a mystery. This finding remains unexplained. Vera Sharov spent years investigating Dr. Fauci's torture chambers as part of her lifelong mission to end cruel medical experimentation on children. Sharov told me, "Fauci just brushed all those dead babies under the rug. They were collateral damage in his career ambitions. They were throwaway children." Sharov said that at least 80 children died in Dr. Fauci's Manhattan concentration camp and accused NIAID and its partners of disposing of children's remains in mass graves. BBC's heartbreaking 2004 documentary, Guinea Pig Kids, chronicles the savage barbarity of Dr. Fauci's science projects from the perspective of the affected children. That year, BBC hired investigative reporter Celia Farber to conduct field research for the film, which exposes the dark underside of Big Pharma's stampede to develop lucrative new AIDS remedies. "I found the mass grave at Gate of Heaven Cemetery in Hawthorne, New York," she told me. "I couldn't believe my eyes. It was a very large pit with astroturf thrown over it, which you could actually lift up. Under it, one could see dozens of plain wooden coffins, haphazardly stacked. There may have been 100 of them. I learned that there was more than one child's body in each. Around the pit was a semicircle of several large tombstones on which upward of 1,000 children's names had been engraved. I wrote down every name. I'm still wondering who the rest of those kids were. As far as I know, nobody has ever asked Dr. Fauci that haunting question. I remember the teddy bears and hearts in piles around the pit, and I recall the flies buzzing around. The job of recording all those names took all day. NIAID, New York, and all the hospital PIs were stonewalling us. We couldn't get any accurate estimate of the number of children who died in the NIAID experiments or who they were. I went to check the gravestone names against death certificates at the NYC Department of Health, which you could still do at that time. BBC wanted to match these coffins to the names of children who were known to have been at ICC. It was a very slow Byzantine project with tremendous institutional resistance, but we did turn up a few names. We learned the story of a father who had come out of prison looking for his son. He was told his son had died at ICC of AIDS, and there were no medical records, as they'd all been lost in a fire. He was devastated. This story ran in the New York Post, believe it or not, but one after the other, every media outlet that touched this story got cold feet. Even then, the medical cartel had this power to kill this kind of story. Dr. Fauci has built his career on that attitude. Nobody even asks him a follow-up question. NIAID's narrative at that time was that these children were among the doomed as they had AIDS, so supposedly they were all going to die anyway. When people died in large numbers, gruesome deaths, NIAID's medical researchers called it lessons learned. 2 years later, Farber would follow the trail of child casualties left by Dr. Fauci's AIDS branch, DAIDS, in Uganda, exposing the pattern of abusing African mothers and children. After the BBC documentary aired, AP reporter John Solomon made his own efforts to calculate the number of children who died in Dr. Fauci's AIDS drug experiments. Solomon's May 2005 AP investigation revealed that at least 465 New York City foster children were subjects in NIAID's trials, and that Dr. Fauci's agency provided fewer than one-third or 142 of those children with an advocate, the minimum legally mandated protection. A March 2004 letter from Vera Sharov to Dr. David Horowitz, director of FDA's Office of Compliance, charged Dr. Fauci's HIV drug trials with numerous violations of federal law, including NIAID's failure to protect the rights and safety of foster children, particularly during the perilous Phase 1 stages in which drug companies determine toxicity effects by exploring maximum tolerance levels. Shirov accused Dr. Fauci's team of illegally failing to provide state wards